Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is iFanboy Pick of the Week 822, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you who are not invading anyone.
That's a cool shot, darling.
Hello, welcome to iFanboy Pick of the Week, episode 822. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and this is my co-host, Josh Flanagan.
I was thinking about ER just now, the television program from 30 years ago.
Was it 30 years ago?
Not quite. 27.
Jesus. All right, joining us this week, we had a third this week, is comicbook.com's Jim Viscardi.
Oh, man, let's go. I think this is the first time I've done it with both of you.
Really?
Yes, because I think this has been the running gag.
Like, no, you know, we had you on when DC left Diamond.
Oh, right. Okay, never mind.
How long
second
is that?
That was during the pandemic, and it could have been 14
during the
years
pandemic.
Ago. Yeah,
right. Okay,
that's still happening. The pandemic is still happening. It was during the lockdown. It was during the lockdown when we were
all right,
going
like the hardcore original like World on Fire shit.
We had Jim on when DC left Diamond. I think we had you on early in the lockdown when they stopped shipping comics. So every time something happens big in the industry, that's when we have you on. Yeah.
There should be some real reason to think of you. Shit's going wrong. I'll call Jim.
And I saw Jim this week. Jim and I actually saw each other in person for the first time. It was 3 years.
It was so great. Yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah, probably we both saw each other at the Moon Knight premiere in LA. And it was like we got to hug each other. And it was like, I haven't seen you in 3 years. And it was, these are the moments we're starting to have now as society. Anyway, let's get to the show. I haven't seen Josh in how many years? I've seen Josh. When was the last time I saw you in person?
Cape Cod 18, 19?
2018?
Oh, wow.
Something like that.
Jeez, see? Exactly.
I had the truck, so it was right after I got the truck, so it was 2018.
That night? All right, we can't do this right now. We are a fanboy, and every week we read a bunch of comics. One of us picks one they like the best. We call it the pick of the week. We'll talk about that book. The other books, I'm talking fast because we've got a lot of show to do. 19. We'll talk about the patron pick, listener mail, if we have time. But we have a discussion topic this week, and also the world is still on fire. All we can do is make our dumb comic jokes in the face of everything. So it's not that we don't care. Here's your spoiler warning. There'll be some spoilers, excessive cost. Hey, this script says Jim had the pick.
Oh, yeah!
Not his first.
Not
the first time he's done it. Yeah,
not my first. I mean, that one was extra special.
I gotta say, I was so the first time I told you you had the pick, I was so surprised by your reaction, because what I thought I was doing was giving you a chore, and what you thought was happening was you were getting an honor, and I was like, oh right, okay, that makes sense. I thought I was asking you to take the trash out.
Although it feels like each time I've had the pick, it's been usually on some rougher weeks for comics, but
welcome to the grind. Sometimes it's a good week, sometimes it's a bad week.
But today's choice is pretty easy. Today's choice is pretty easy with Human Target Book 6. Tom King has got a knack for
you think
writing couples. Or yeah. like, or just like,
yeah.
When he focuses on just two people talking to one another, like it is truly something magical.
I think you're right, and I didn't even think about that. But I'm thinking about my favorite Tom King books, and I have to put
you're right.
this up there with Miracle Man, and that Miracle Man is all about not Miracle Man. I said every time Mr. Miracle. It's all about yep. Barda and Scott, and this is right. all turning all into Christopher and Ice.
And some of my favorite issues that he wrote for when on Batman was the yep. date night bits he did. Like those were great. And so this book, obviously Tom King, Greg Smallwood, Clayton Cowles, what a phenomenal team. I mean, man, it's so interesting that like Greg Smallwood's been around for a while, and obviously, my first real brush with him was the run he did on Moon Knight with Jeff Lemire, and obviously everyone's reading Moon Knight now, and Marvel just put out that collection. But like, this guy is so good.
He's off the charts.
Ryan Wood, so good.
Yeah,
and it's just one of those. It's one of those things too where. Like Tom talks about this quite a bit when just kind of like pairing himself, when picking collaborators and things like that to work with. Tom and whatever artist he gets, and I think like Greg is pretty adaptable as well. But this is a pairing that I would love to see more of.
Oh sure, I'd love him to be his second Mitch Garrett. You know, like
somewhere Mitch yeah. Garrett's like no, get him away. I don't like. I have to do with right. that Jorge Fornes guy. I hate this.
but even then, right? Like it'd be like, you get the three of them on a book together, right? And they like have Mitch do some, scenes for something, and then Greg and like I said,
I disagree with that, by the
and
way.
And then Doc Shaner's like, wait a minute.
Right. Right. But Greg handles facial expressions and that kind of acting so well that even when you have like this book has got a ton of just straight up conversation and a bunch of stuff going on, but like the moments that are the best are just watching the characters kind of act their way through that. And a lot of that is obviously through, the work that Greg does, but is moved along by a lot of the, Tom King dialogue.
Look at page 16. I think we're all in Comixology. Look at page 16.
Yep.
Look at that Guy Gardner face. No one draws faces like that in comic books.
Yep.
Look at that.
Yeah.
I mean, there's usually a stock face,
right.
But there's comic book face. It's just, but no one draws God. That kind of face.
The petulance of panel two.
Yeah, that's the panel I'm looking at. Then.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're and right. So, like you get so much here through the eyes and the. I mean, there's a lot of subtext in Tom King books, obviously, and a lot of that mm-hmm. is that has falls on the artist to convey. Think about how much of this particular issue is
all
done through what Ice's expression is. Versus what she's saying,
mm-hmm.
And you need the artist for that, and it's terrific.
I mean,
right, and then but even like the what because Greg does is I believe Greg is doing his own coloring here,
yeah.
And like so yes. the way he sets moods is and uses like colors in a way that like they're almost neon, but like in a really weird like subdued manner that just make everything kind of pop.
As you look through it, you also kind of notice that he's often using shadow or the light that comes through shadow as an internal mm-hmm. frame.
Yeah,
he does mm-hmm. it all through the issue. So the light is making a frame inside that, which is highlight. In some cases, so the beginning, page six, when he's drinking in his office, like you mm-hmm. see him drinking in the... God, that's a good fucking panel.
But, yeah, it's really great.
I mean, but like, so it's layers upon layers upon layers. I think that it's safe to say at this point, Greg Smallwood seems to be... If he's not there yet, he's pretty close to being on. Like he's doing Mazzucchelli level, he's doing Darwin Cook level
mm-hmm.
storytelling.
Yeah.
And it's not like the drafting and the drawing and the stuff. Like whatever. I mean, it's amazing too, but it's so good. It is so advanced, as to be. It's subtle. It is. Mm-hmm. It is. you know, it doesn't stick out at you. It's not like Jack Kirby storytelling, you know, which is, right. you know, punch you in the face, or John Romita, or, you know, Walt Simonson, that kind of thing. It's the other thing. When yeah. when we talk about Mazzucchelli, it's just like, we're going to give you exactly what it should be, you know, and it's not going to punch you in the face, but you're going to, like, if you know what you're talking about, you're going to get the feeling if you don't, but if you know what you're talking about, you start seeing these things that you're like, oh my God, look at this, what he's doing. It's like, I was going to use a sports metaphor. If you watch a player who's not like a big, like a basketball player who's not, you know, scoring all the time and dunking, but is making everything happen constantly all the time, stuff you don't see, Chris Paul kind of, you know, point guard stuff, like that's what's happening here. And it's pretty as hell.
Yeah.
Now, I feel like we're like, this is one of those where, this is one of those issues where, and I don't mean to steal your thunder, we will get to it.
No, go for it.
This is one of those issues where it wins pick of the week on a page turn.
Mm-hmm.
There's a moment that happens where you just, whoa, like 100% mm-hmm. surprise, did not expect to see the thing that happened and the turn that the story is going to take, that they're going to make us wait however many months for the next part.
6 months, I think.
Yeah. So we're right? talking about, so we're going to get to that and you can talk about it a second. The one yeah. other thing that happened before that, I thought, the one thing I really liked about this issue before that even happened, and I will say, Jim, you had another pick in mind for a little bit, and I was like,
I
don't know if I want to talk about the human target again. And I was reading the book, I was like, yeah, no, there's no other way around this. But there is the very beginning of the issue, there's a fight, Ice is mad, and
no argument.
I was like, oh, that's what this is going to be. And then he just goes back to her house and it's over. And I thought, oh, that's really interesting, because I don't want the book to be about the two of them fighting. Mm-hmm. But they had to acknowledge that conflict and then got over it. And even that was done well, because they didn't talk. They just boned. But then they, you know, intentionally didn't talk about it, which I was right. like, oh, that's how we're going to hit stasis on this. And it might come back later.
Because they really do like each other. It, and so that's what you do when the guy is dying. You know, it's like you can mm-hmm. spend
that's
the,
what it proved.
His
yeah.
remaining time fighting, or you can spend it boning. And so... and we've talked about this is a classic noir story. So mm-hmm. in addition to the big thing that happens in the middle, the ending is, you know, we talked about how Ice was the prototypical noir good girl that shows up in the office, in Philip Marlowe's office. This ends with Fire showing up, and she's the prototypical femme fatale. So mm-hmm. Tom's really hitting. I mean, this series was kind of made for me.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, like on a lot of levels. So this is quickly becoming... I still think Mr. Miracle is his opus. I think it was so complex and dense and said so many things, and it was so successful yeah. in terms of storytelling. But this is a hard number two for me right now.
Well, that's why I appreciate what I like about this series more so than Mr. Miracle is that this is a bit more straightforward. This yes. is yeah. it is like when this is fully collected and all that, this I think is going to be easier for me to recommend
to someone than
Mr. Miracle to get their taste in. And then be like, if you love this, then you got to go read Mr. Miracle. But like, well, I just wanted to mention there's one part in the book where basically like right, you know, when you're finding out guy shows up where like they just finished boning and he is looking back, and you've got that Green Lantern, you know, hammer right there in
the
window.
Beautiful.
That's like, it is just like, oh, it is about to go from 0 to 100, like right now. And yep. and it does. And it's a great, like that's, there are a few of those kind, like there's the big page turn, but there's also like this one right here that just sets up like, you know, that is like, oh, here we go.
If you're someone like me who read all these Justice League stories and read the whole time where Guy and Ice were a major couple, that sequence is tough mm-hmm. because it's basically, it goes from a jealous ex-boyfriend to a physical conflict to a abusive conflict, you know, mm-hmm. where he says, you need to learn what's good for you.
That was a really interesting choice, too, because in order for what happens... And let's just, you know, guys smashed. In order for what happens to be justified, you get mm-hmm. he turns into a monster for a second.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, it's a really important, and I've had, because I'm only saying this because I've had this conflict on like our Instagram page. Like, this is not in continuity.
No,
obviously, right. It seems right. like it's obvious, but it's clearly not to everybody. This is not in continuity. It's a Black Label book. they are generally not in continuity. So this is taking place in this fictional mid-century modern world of DC, in which Justice League International still happened, but this is a different sort of offshoot. And so Guy Gardner gets killed here. He's not, doesn't mean he's dead. He's dead in other, this is off, out of continuity.
Right.
If you go back to the last Talksplode I did with Tom, he specifically talked about the fact that with Heroes, what's the one?
Heroes
in
Crisis.
Wally West one? With yeah. Heroes in Crisis, like, he miscalculated. Yeah. He's like, oh, by doing that to Wally, I did that. That was a bad move. And so I'm fairly certain he's conscious of what he's doing with these characters, and we know that it's not the thing happening in the main story.
Yes,
like
it's out of continuity.
Like, he's absolutely aware of that. I want to finish off the one thing that, in terms of like this being an accessible project, it's interesting because, you know, Connor knows noir really well. And when you say those things, I don't know them, but I go, oh, yeah, I recognize that. And then you also know Justice League, you know, era, yep. You know, JLA era. And I don't really know that stuff either, but it's no less interesting. So it's one of those things, like, it really does hit on all those levels. I think you can be like, oh, this is a great story, even without knowing those things. And I think that's, you know, it just works fully. Anyway, back to your review. I'll shut up.
No, I mean, like, that's it. Like, I think from, I've been enjoying the series, you know, for, you know, up to this point, but, like, the page that just has, like, the chunk of ice melting into a piece of flesh and blood is, like, right? Like,
yeah.
It's dark in a book that, you know, with moments that seem, you know, pretty, you know, just as far as like the artwork goes, like not so much, right? Like everything is just, is a lot of the colors are bright and they're vibrant. And then like you get to that page and you're just like, oh,
yeah.
Okay.
There's no panels. It gets more like an illustration or like right. A book cover almost.
Right. And then you like see the, like, there's like blood and guts on the floor and, you know, melted blood and guts on the floor. Like, and I'm just like, oh, like, how do you clean that up? Like, what?
The first word that is said after all that happens, the body's completely smashed over. The very first dialogue is, I think I'm falling in love with you.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Yeah. And I was like, whoa, that's a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, it's dark because he, you know, so Guy shows up, they get in a fight, ice freezes him. Christopher Chance punches him in the head explodes into pieces, but then ice pushes the body over.
Mm-hmm. That was the thing, because that little hand motion in that one panel told you everything about where we were going to be after mm-hmm. this. Yeah. That's like, oh, this is the new setting, is that she wasn't mad at him.
Yeah.
Or she wasn't
mad at
Chance.
And the thing is, like, we're only halfway
Chance,
through the story,
was,
so yep. we don't know what's happening. And if this follows any kind of traditional line of noir storytelling, which I'm not saying it will, ice is probably more complicit here than we want her to be, and in the main mystery, and the fact that it showed her being, this is not a pun, cold-blooded enough to push her ex-boyfriend's body over and smash it, shows she's got much more darkness in her than yep. we want to mm-hmm. think about,
or we learned, like, he was much worse than we thought.
Well, this, certainly this version things. Of a guy, yeah.
Yeah,
I tell you, there's one other little bit that I noticed as I was reading it, and I had forgotten about it because two pages later the thing happens. When Guy is going after her, and the last thing he says is, "You know, you need to learn what's good for you," and you're like, and which is really uncomfortable. Like,
yeah,
oh,
that's
God,
the abusive
this, I don't want to
yeah.
see that. Like, he's still a Green Lantern, but like this is, I was like, why would his ring still work at this point? But whatever. Christopher Chance decides he needs to do something. He gets real mad, and which is exactly what I need. And then he says, I'm right here in front of you, the human target. And I was like, ooh, that's on the nose, but that was perfect. It was like bringing it back to the idea of what the
what
book is
does.
Called The Human Target, but yeah. who this character is. Because this whole time, he's sort of morphed into a, you know, Sam Spade detective kind of thing. And he's like, no, he's the human target. And so then he, and it's heroic. You know, because the other thing is, he's not a hero in this or whatever, but he does the heroic thing. He turns that to him. You know, like, yeah. makes himself the target instead of the woman, which I think lends credence and drama to what, Connor, you just said, is what's probably going to happen, but we don't know.
Yeah, we don't. There's so much that could happen. And even if she's complicit, doesn't mean she's guilty. There's two differences. There's a difference between those two. We also didn't mention this. There's a terrific opening scene with Dr. Midnight. Like, there's just a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Three, four, five, and six, 5 and 6 have been the pick of the week. 4, I thought, was one of the best Englishes I've ever read. It wasn't Josh's pick of the week. We'll get over that. But this book is really firing right now. Like, I liked
was
one
it Iron Man?
I think it was when you did Iron Man, yeah. It was a good issue of Iron Man. I'm not denying that. But 1, 2, 3 were like, wow, what is going on here? But 4, 5, and 6 were like, okay, this is what's going on here, and this is amazing. Mm-hmm. And so it's a bummer that we have to wait 6 months for the next issue, but I get it, and I would never want Smallwood to rush it. No. I would never want another artist to take over.
Keep Liam Sharp away from this.
I don't want Liam Sharp filling in. So, you know, I'll wait. So, great issue. Great pick.
Yep.
Great comic. Mm-hmm. Now, Josh, I would never have read Wolverine Patch Number 1, written by Larry Hammond, drawn by Andrea DeVito with an inker, if not for your text message. So why don't you tell us about this issue?
I was flipping through, like, what is there to read this week? And there wasn't a lot.
It was a light week.
Yeah, it was. I saw Wolverine Patch Number 1, and I thought, oh, that's Patches is my, like, first couple of comics. That's Wolverine Number 1 from the...
What year was that?
Claremont, Buscema? I'm going to say 88. 88, I think.
Yeah. I thought it was late 80s. I couldn't remember when he was Patch.
Yeah, it's 87, 88. I forget. I want to say I was 11 when I started buying comics, so that about tracks.
Look at that Buscema title page art. Ugh, that's the best.
And I looked, and I was like, well, wait, who's doing that? At first, I thought it was like a collection of that stuff. I was like, oh, it's a Patch collection. So it was a single issue that was coming out now, and it said the writer was Larry Hama, and I thought, I can do that. Let's do that. And, like, it's a throwback comic book. I don't know that Larry Hama can do something else, but I don't expect him to, and I'm just super glad he still gets to work. Like, if you want Larry Hama comics, you can get them all the time now. Isn't that great? Yeah. And it's not Larry Hama trying to do... Brian Azzarello, he's like, no, I'm going to do my thing. I'm going to keep a gun on the desk. Anybody who's read the Marvel comics, The Untold, is it The Untold Story? That Marvel comics book by Sean Howe. Yeah. There's a story about Larry Hama that almost makes the whole thing worth it. Anyway, so this is a contemporary to the time of Patch is on Madripoor. He's kind of running the bar. He's a little Sam Spade himself. Not Sam Spade. Who's the Casablanca character? That one.
Rick Blaine.
There you go. You know, and a job comes along, and, you know, he's got his plucky pilot friend, and the plot doesn't matter because it's just Wolverine. It is written in a sort of mid-80s style. Andrea DeVito, who is, you know, a modern artist, but sort of goes along with it. And it's just a Wolverine story, like from that time, as opposed to whatever the hell Wolverine is now. There's no Genosha. It's all Krakoa. It's all overwrought, and the dialogue is, you know, exactly what I would want from all of this.
Fury shows up to be classic Nick Fury.
Yes, there was just a bunch of moments that just tickled my very specific good old superhero bone, and I was like, oh, this is the Wolverine that I met originally, and so there's a special spot for that kind of thing. And I just thought it was super fun. It was so fun. I loved reading this book, and just for people who say I hate X-Men, you know, I had a great time with it.
Yeah, I did
think
too.
I sent you some panel.
It was the Nick Fury panels,
right? Yeah. And like in the way that he talked.
Yeah. She's got a surveillance in Prague right now. Nick Fury. Good.
Those two pages with like Nick Fury and the helicarrier, and I was like, oh,
so good.
Oh,
yes, well, you're right, Josh. This is a feeling of like a sort of 50s movie with the expats living in some exotic location. You know, the pilot who can't keep his business afloat, and it had that real sort of. I don't even know what genre that is, but it has that feeling of it. And I don't remember reading if that was how it was at the time. Maybe it was, but because, you know, Patch is silly. He's walking around in a white tuxedo with his eye patch, and I don't even remember why he was doing it at the time. He jumps out of a plane and lands in the jungle. He's still wearing the tuxedo.
When he was in that plane, I thought, oh, he's going to jump out of that plane. Like, and he didn't even consider a parachute. They probably had one in there he could have used, but I guess he was trying to stay covert. They wouldn't see him. He did that on purpose. But I was. They well telegraphed. I was like, he is 100% going to jump out of that plane. He didn't change for it. He kept
the
on his
tailoring
jacket.
On that tuxedo is terrific because he is.
Yeah.
He crashes through the trees. He lands. He breaks his bones. The bones heal. Then he has a giant fight. But he's still in the tuxedo the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
I move too quickly in my suit, and everything comes undone. So I don't know.
And the fact is, they did not have stretch fabrics back then.
Right.
No. Nope.
Whenever this was.
This was fun. I mean, if you're not into this era, characters talk to each other out loud. You know, they are constantly saying who they are and what their powers are. But I appreciate that at a certain level because there's too many times I read a modern book where I don't know who anyone is or what their abilities are. Here it's like my senses tell me, you know, my super smell cells tells me, my healing factor does this, my bones are this. That's how you get people to understand what they're reading if they don't know, they're new to the book.
Yeah. And it fully leaned into it. Mm-hmm. There was no attempt to do something other than what it was. It is that thing where, you know, say what you will, it was much easier for us to get into comic books, you know, when they did shit like this because they set the table for you every time. And now if you come in part two or three of the five-part arc that's going to be collected in the trade and everybody's just sort of glancing at each other. And I mean, Human Target's probably a good example of this. But, you know, this is like the polar opposite of that comic book.
Yeah. And they're both
super fun.
Yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
What is this book?
X-Deaths of Wolverine number 5.
It's literally called X-Deaths. Wait, are we supposed to say 10? I don't remember.
It's probably 10. It's probably 10 deaths, but
it's not as much fun to say as X-Deaths.
No.
Right. Exactly.
Like X of Swords.
This series for me has been just pure fun. It's so bananas. The fact that the main villain of this book is some weird Omega Wolverine from, you know, the future and whatever. Like, it's just like, I just love it. I've really enjoyed Ben Piercy's run on Wolverine, and so when this got announced, I was like, oh, okay, cool. And then I read the first couple issues and I'm like, I don't really know what's going on here. But then, like, because you also have to read, you know, the 10 lives of Wolverine, and there's a lot of stuff going on there. And like, look, any book that that's gonna stick Omega Red in it, and like, Omega Red has been a you know, part of the Wolverine run so far, look, it's gonna get me in. But I love, I'm a sucker for Wolverine stories that have Wolverine and Dakin and, you know, and Laura all together, you know, doing stuff. And that's what this is. And, you know, at the end, we get basically like Terminator Moira coming out of a grave, basically, maybe. I don't know, but I'm in for it. And
It's funny because I was super into the Hickman X-Men world. You know, like I read all the books, or at least I tried all the books. I didn't stick with all of them, but I was super into the concept, the Fuck Island, the business they've created. The you know, they were making pharmaceuticals, the Gates, the Nation. I was really into it, and then at some point, like it broke off, and then they went into space, and then the X deaths, the X swords. I think it was when the Ten of Swords thing happened. That's when I was like, oh, I don't think this is for me anymore. It's a bummer because I was really into the X-Men stuff, and I'm still reading X-Men, and I'm still reading a couple of things. But whatever's going on now, I have completely lost the thread of what's happening, and it's a little bummer because I was really into it.
The only books I have stayed with in the X world has been Wolverine and his X-Force, which has been a surprising delight. But also, it didn't necessarily do anything in this book, but like just the stuff that Adam Kubert's been doing in Wolverine is just
so. Is this not like the regular Wolverine book? Are there three now Wolverine books?
Well, no. This is like a mini event, basically.
I see.
That is happening, you know, in that stuff, and then it'll, you know, all shrink back down to Wolverine. It's violent, but kind of just feels like silly, fun Wolverine adventures that aren't like super serious or dealing with, you know, like your typical Wolverine kind of pastiches, right? Like, you know, right. There's so like that's what I've enjoyed about this book, and it just goes balls to the wall, and right. And I appreciate it for that.
I like that. Like, I don't know that all that stuff, like, it's I sure. find it all confusing, and I always feel completely lost, but you have your foothold in it, and I understand everything else you're saying and that feeling, which is the same thing right. we were just talking about with the other Wolverine. It's just like that had context for me and it doesn't, and right. and it's fun. I love that, like, oh, this gave me that, this is crazy, but you know the pieces enough that it's not confusing. Well, there's the difference is when I read them, I go, I'm just confused, I don't know,
right,
I don't have the context for any of this, but you know, that's why you're on the show now and not always just me.
So, similar to
what a great
Wolverine
week.
Patch, and actually also X-Test Wolverine, the feeling you get, I'm feeling I get from reading Maestro, World War M, number 2, Peter David, Homeron, Peralta. I just love, we've talked a lot about all of these miniseries. I've loved this. I love the original Future Imperfect story, which we were going to do in a book slow, but now it seems to have disappeared from Comixology. this book is great. It's great on many levels. The art's terrific. Peter David can still write comic books that are exciting and have page turns that blow your mind. But there's so much tragedy in this story where you just want Hulk to figure it out and stop being an asshole, but you know he's not going to because it has to end up in Future Imperfect. You know, there's a point here in this story where he goes underwater and he finds Namor's hidden, like, civilization underwater that goes well beyond Atlantis. And they're like, dude, just come live with us. It's cool down here. We got fish. Like, it's all chill. Just don't need to worry about it. And he's like, fuck this, and decides to destroy everything. And you're just like, no, Banner, no. And God, I love this book so much.
Which is what he's done every – it's all this story is. It's someone like, well, what about this? And he goes, no, I smash it. Like, that's all
you?
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it just keeps going. He won't stop. And it is not getting less fun. What's funny to me, though, is that in this one, you know, Namor's like, oh, yeah, check this monster out. And I was like, that monster's not going to do anything to it. And then he's like, you ought to see. And then he even says, he goes, this is only my second biggest monster. I was like, that other one's not going to do anything either. Haven't you been paying attention? And it didn't make it less enjoyable. I am not pointing out flaws in logic that are a problem in this book. I am pointing out flaws in logic that make the book fun. And I don't know how to tell you when certain stories where that works and certain stories where it doesn't. But in this, like, I don't need this to make any sense. What the Hulk does, and this is important, is smash. You stick to that rule and you've won the game. This yeah. is the problem with Hulk in the latter half of the MCU movies. He wasn't smashing.
Right.
Yep.
If he had been smashing, and I know why, too, actually, because had he smashed, the stories would have been different because Hulk is the strongest one there is. I get it. That's why you had to sideline him. They knew that.
Right.
So the only thing about this book was I had a little bit caught up in the timelines. Like, so here we have Namor and Abomination and Jim Hammond, Human Torch, teaming up with Dr. Doom. And Hulk doesn't know who Jim Hammond is, and Jim Hammond doesn't know who Dr. Doom is. And I was trying to figure out, because in the early 90s when this original story came out originally, wasn't Jim Hammond already back on the West Coast Avengers at that point? Like, shouldn't everyone have known who he was, and shouldn't he know who Dr. Doom? I couldn't.
Connor,
I was.
Connor,
well, let it go. I know.
Let it go.
I know.
Really,
this is the problem.
Really quick though, I do want to mention, because like this, I guess, seemed to be big week for throwback stuff. Yeah. Venom Lethal Protector from David Michelinie also came out this week, and like I had it on the list, but like there was not a bunch of stuff I wanted, but like definitely has. It was weird for me because I didn't like live. Well, not that I didn't live. I wasn't reading comics through that stuff. And so again, like, it's just like watching or reading that book, being like, oh, I can get why this like feels really fun. But like Marvel seems to definitely be doing that. Like, oh, hey, it feels like when they first had Claremont come back for like X-Men Forever or whatever.
Yeah.
But like, and
you're right. There's a whole subsection of books they're putting out of like creators from the 80s and 90s doing those stories again.
Right.
Yeah. And they're recognizing, they're like, hey, our audience seems to be the same people and they're aging. So what if we just give them these things that they want? Hey, this right. works, yeah. you know.
But like, it wouldn't work unless they were really good, though. And they are.
It's true, but all the people who made those comics originally are not old. They're in their 50s. It's not
like they got chicken in their 30s. where in like 10 years we get like Bendis coming back for an Avengers run or something, or like Bendis comes back to Daredevil. And like,
I mean, that's absolutely
where he left,
going to
where
happen.
Where he left off, right? Like,
yeah, yeah. This book is great. I'm this is the third mini, right? Leading up to the,
yeah,
to the,
I think so.
Yeah. Well, if we can figure out how to do a book split with Future Perfect, we're going to do it. All right, really quickly, because I know we're already running long. Here's the ways you can help support this show. It's a time thing. It's a money thing. It helps. All these things help us keep the show going because it's not free and it's not nothing to do the show. The main thing is patreon.com/iFanboy. That's where our main support comes from. The patrons unlock content. They unlock the Splode shows, talk media, and book. They have a hangout. They have a community on Discord and Facebook. They have all kinds of fun things they get to do. They get to pick the patron pick. We hope to make it fun for them, but the patrons are the main place where you can support the show. Thank you for everyone who does that. Patreon.com/iFanboy. Fanboy.threadless.com is our t-shirt store, including our Gosh shirt, which is our new shirt. I just wore that shirt the other day. It was nice. It's a very comfortable shirt. Fanboy.com/support. That's our digital tip jar via PayPal. Fanboy.com/Amazon. That's where you can find our Booksplode books and our shopping link. And bookshop.org. You can find links for those books on our Booksplode shows. And we thank everyone who supports the show in all the ways I just mentioned. It helps keep the show going, keeps the lights on, keeps the bills paid. We handsomely reward our guest hosts, so they take up most of our income. So we thank you for everyone who does that. And let's get back to the books. The second issue of Love Everlasting came out. Well, it came out 2 weeks ago, I think, for paid people on Substack, but this week it came out for free on Substack. Tom King, Elsa
Charretier.
Sorry, wrong. Matt Hollingsworth, Clayton Cowles. Similar to the first issue, this was less. This story stayed in one place as opposed to the first issue, which spanned different stories. But I know there's a larger thing at play here. But I just got into this particular story itself. Like, this could have just been
totally
a single.
I got into the straight up romance part of it. I was like, what's going to happen?
Exactly. Like, I know there's a thing here. Joan's been the same character throughout all the stories, but like, I don't care. By the end, I was like, are they going to find love? And they didn't.
100%.
So, it's...
I was like, maybe he's going to play this one straight up and we can just see what it... No. All right, fine. Like, when she said, I don't love you, I was like, oh, no. No. I was just in Down Abbey mode. The art was beautiful. It was like, I got to the end and I looked at it. I was like, this is amazing. You can rip off Darwin Cook anytime you'd like. It's so pretty. Action Comics 1041. I didn't put this on here.
I did.
I enjoyed it. Okay, go ahead.
I put it on there because it's a similar thing we've talked about before. You know, if this was an out of continuity Superman story, it'd be terrific. I don't like it as a main continuity Superman story. However, with this issue, I've decided, after lots of thought, I really hate the Wildstorm characters being in the DC Universe.
Mm.
They don't fit. Doesn't make sense. You know, the whole point of Midnighter is he's Batman, but, you know, more extreme. But here he's talking about Batman. Like, I hate the Batman comparisons. I was like, this doesn't work. You can't take the characters who are commentaries on certain characters and put them with those characters. It doesn't work anymore.
They can and did.
I know they can, but I'm saying it doesn't work.
Jim Lee's
in charge. I'm not in charge. Jim Lee is in charge.
I did. Well, there you go.
But is he?
I don't know anymore. So anyway, this was good, but I just had the thought by the end of it. I was like, okay, you know, I don't want this character.
I, as a I guess fantasy sword, you know, gladiator kind of thing. I was down with it. I have no idea what's going on. And I don't care. Like, I really am having fun with it because I'm not thinking about it at all.
I do think the story should move up a little bit.
Yeah, but I think it did a little bit this time. Like, finally Superman shows up, you know, and I was like, okay, good. Because if he hadn't, there's a bit where he shows up, but he's off screen. And I was like, oh, this isn't going to be him. But it really was, and I was very happy about that.
All right, we gotta talk about Iron Man, only because I got to say, Christopher Cantwell is writing one of the best Iron Man stories. In recent memory, it is.
I got that sense as I was reading this issue, as I sort of saw it all coalesce into a thing. I was like, oh. And then I thought, thank God this doesn't have anything to do with any other story going on with Tony Stark right now.
Yeah. I mean, it's been the culmination of a this just entire run that he's been doing. There's still another part left in this, but there were a ton of really big emotional beats here. And if you've been, you know, if you're an Iron Man fan, I truly, you know, suggest going ahead and just picking this up and reading the issues. The relationship that Tony has kind of picked up here is phenomenal. Like, I love stories that where Iron Man has vulnerability in a way that just kind of shows you just like what I think makes Iron Man really, really good. And it's the stories that show that vulnerability and is really just what make this for me. And so
Campbell's thing since he had a co-writer on Halt and Catch Fire, but he does the stories about, you know, brilliantly talented, egotistical men better than anybody in the world. And my favorite bit, and we'll move on, my favorite bit in this was at the very end, Korvac shows back up after Tony's gotten rid of his power cosmic or whatever, and Tony's fallen down and he's in morphine withdrawal. You know, these are all the great bits. And at that moment, Korvac has a moment of humanity. He's like, oh, man. And that is like classic Halt and Catch Fire, Joe McDonald, evil... bit of humanity moment. And I was like, oh, that's the stuff. Nobody does that stuff very well. And this is, you know, I don't think it's your mainstream Iron Man, but it's real good.
Yeah, it's been a great run. For sure. So those books we're going to talk about, but at patreon.com/ifanboy, I started to put my iPad away for some reason. All the patrons can vote to add a book to the rundown. It's called the Patron Pick. And this week, overwhelmingly, they voted for Rogues, Book One, the latest Black Label release from DC Comics, written by Joshua Williamson, with art by Leo Max, colors by Mateus Lopez and Hassan Osmane Elwahu on letters. And this is a, it's a miniseries. It's a Black Label look at the Rogues, the Flash Rogues, who are old, retired, and looking for one last score. Leo Max did the art, Josh, on Refrigerator Full of Heads, or what was the one? Bucket Full of Heads?
Yeah, I think that's right. The first one. Basket Full.
Basket Full of Heads. Yes, he did that one. I like his art a lot.
I do too. And the coloring this was also just perfect for what it was. And it just gave you that hint, like, this isn't exactly like a regular comic book. This is that Elseworlds, that Black Label thing.
The concept for this is just great. Because I think it's just like it's one of those questions that, you know, you ask, like, what would that look like? And it gets explored every once in a while in some stories or whatever here, but like to kind of, you know, pull it all together into, you know, to be the focus of a story or a series has really been
fun. Issue opens in somewhat present where Ape from Angel and the Ape is hanging out at the villain bar, lamenting the fact that Angel has left him, which causes a giant brawl to happen in the bar. But in the midst of that, he lets it slip while Captain Cold is next to him getting shots, the cheapest liquor you got, that Gorilla Grodd is sitting on just an immense amount of gold under Gorilla City. And so we jump to the future 10 years later, and Captain Cold is on parole working at a factory. He's, you know, all the rogues basically have stopped criminaling because they're either dead or they're retired and or too old and,
or reformed
and he decides he gets promoted. And this was actually really heartbreaking. I thought the whole beginning of this book was terrific, where he's on parole, he's got an asshole parole officer who hassles him, he takes the bus to work, this mural that gives him pride to welcome this, we built Central City, gets torn down, he's working at the box factory. And he gets promoted to like manager, and he's got a management job. He feels some pride in it, like he can't believe it. But then he overhears
the job. He was doing the right thing.
Yeah, and then he overhears the bosses say, you know, make fun of him and say they're only doing it as a quote unquote diversity hire because he's an ex-con, and they're making fun of him for used to be a supervillain, and he's not that scary. And so then I was like heartbroken for him at that moment. Yeah. It was terrible. And then, you know, going home and on the bus and seeing the mural torn down and Central City is no longer the place he knew, and he's got no pride left, and so he decides to go back to life of crime and get the band back together, who are all in various
stages. It's Ocean's 11 with the Rogues. Brilliantly constructed. My thought as I was reading this is that like Joshua Williamson is you know, he's many things. I don't know that he necessarily has a significant voice of his own. He's not Tom King. But if you give him any genre, almost any style of thing, and you mix it with superheroes, like, he can do a letter perfect version of the thing. And that's what I kept thinking all the way through this, is that, like, it's pretty by the numbers in terms of the thing, but it is so well enmeshed with the characters and the DC universe, you know, idea, and so, you know, intelligent, and he doesn't miss any of the beats, any of the tricks. You know, as we're going through, if you take Captain Cold and you see him from the beginning to the point when he takes the another frozen head off of one of the people, you know, you see, like, he's been this guy all along. But also, they are still rolling on the side of, like, are they really bad guys? You know, like, they are, but, like, are they more like the love of rogues, I guess, is the well, word for it.
He's definitely the worst. And Captain Cold's always been the worst. So the rest of them are horrified by what he does and horrified by all of this, basically. Now, they may all end up where he is now, but at this point, you know, his sister is like, he was pretty horrified by what his brother just did to all these guys. And but they're also, they live in a weird spot, the rogues do. Why does that rehab facility have an armed troop of guards?
I had that question myself. I was like, is this a supervillain rehab facility? Or is that what rehab is like now?
Right, because, like, I can see, like, maybe one. They have a platoon of heavily armed soldiers at this rehab facility. Which I thought was a little strange. But other than that, what did you think of this book, Jim?
I really enjoyed it. Like I said, I love the premise of it. I think one of the, true kind of powerhouses in this is the lettering from Hassan. He's like just the even everything from the textured speech bubbles to some of the sound effects and things like that, like, I think are really helped move this the book along. And I caught myself a number of times just being like, oh, the lettering here is really cool. And so I definitely wanted to
if you look in the bar scene, the drunk guy, like, the lettering is, that's really good. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. You're right. Good spot.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but like I said, like, it's just, it was a ton of fun. I'm totally in on this ride. And I can't wait to see more.
Yeah. The bar scene was terrific. The whole beginning from the bar scene through when
I'm
Cold makes his turn was just really great.
Yeah. It really was super fun. I didn't know what it was going to be. I wasn't super excited about starting it. And then right away, you know, I was pulled in. You know, you have the gorilla drinking at the bar, and the guy walking up to me and thinking he's the drunken guy, thinking he's, you know, Grodd. I was like, that's fucking brilliant. That, you know, the drunk talk, the fact that it keeps happening in the background, and then the loaded weapon of the gorilla, who is a gorilla, who is angry and who is drinking, you know, and it goes off. You know, any villain bar scene in superhero comics is great.
Yeah.
All villain bars, that might be the best of superhero comics. That's true. Is a villain bar scene. Just kind of write that down for some future t-shirt idea. There's something there. I don't know what it is.
So ratings on Rogues Book 1 out of 5 stars. Ratings. I'm giving it 4 stars. I really liked it, and I'm looking forward to more of it.
That's where I was going with it as well. I really liked it. I'm going 4.
I'm going 4.5. I really enjoyed the hell of it. I was really impressed with every person on the creative team, like, really just showing up to do exactly what they were supposed to do for this story. You know, and as a first issue, super compelling. You know, I really enjoyed it.
Patreon.com/iFanboy. Every patron can vote to add a book to the rundown. But if you give it the $5 or higher level, you get your superpower live on the show, a patron power, as it were. What is the patron power this week, Josh, for your person?
Lanny Barr takes no guff. He is impervious to guff. He won't have it. He won't take it. It bounces off of him. If you're trying to give him guff, it's not going to land. It's not going to affect him. And you're going to be sorry if you try to send guff his way. He takes no guff.
So he's just really tough? Or...
Well, I mean, like, I would say that it goes a step further than that, and were I to imagine such, is that if somebody tries to give him guff, there could be a series of events that would prevent that from happening, or, you know...
Consequences.
Okay, let's say, for example, I don't know, you're at a film premiere, and you're trying to get in, and you can't get in there. Some Jamoke in a lanyard is giving you guff. Is not going to go that way for Lanny. He's right. Like, no, that's not how this works. I'm going through. He goes in. Alarms can go off. Police can show up. But he's not taking that guff. He's going. He said, no, this is going to be fine for him. He's not taking that guff. You're in line at the DMV. You know, someone's yelling at you or whatever, and it just rolls off him, and things work out. There's no negative consequences that can come from guff givers.
I understand. I see.
Does that work?
That works for me. Al Folger. Folger? We'll say Folger.
Folger.
Al Folger. He's like the forge for roofing. He can fix any roofing problem. He can diagnose. You know, it's just it's a magical, not magic, but it's like he's got it all. Your roof will be completely fixed and up to date and modern. You just fix any roof very quickly.
Still working on your ceiling, Connor?
No, it's been fixed for a while.
Started to say it, and I was like, "You're not a homeowner. What the hell are you talking about?" Bought a roof.
I can still see the benefit of having a super roofer. He's a super roofer. He can fix any problem.
Can he install solar panels?
He can do anything related to roofing.
Can he fix solar panel related problems if they have affected your roof?
Yes. In fact, he can create the mythical
solar roofing tile.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, okay. There you go.
Anything to do with roofs, he's like Forge. He can just build it and fix it.
Perfect.
Solar super roofer.
Because I could tell you some stuff about venting and condensation, you know, that would just singe the hairs off the back of your neck, buddy. Let's hope this last thing works.
Mike Bloomrose has the ability to reheat coffee just by holding the cup, but only coffee. He will never, ever have a warm cup. Or if a friend's cup goes warm, she's got to hold on to it. Boom. You got warm coffee.
You mean hot cold. Coffee never goes cold.
Or warm. Warm is almost as bad as cold.
I see. Well,
but you don't want it to be too hot. Like you can't have McDonald's temperature.
Like sometimes if you have a cup of coffee and it's like, oh, I need to warm it up. And so I'll put like more hot coffee from the pot in to try and warm it up.
Oh, that's
He doesn't have to do any of that.
It's always the perfect temperature.
Perfect temperature
at
coffee.
This moment, as you said that, I am on the final bit of my coffee, which I'm drinking out of a Yeti mug, which is a pretty good job at keeping it there. But it is just getting to the point where like any more of this is going to be terrible. And the problem with the Yeti mug is it's metal, so in order to microwave it, I have to transfer it to another thing, and there's going to be spillage at the least, and I'm not going to get there. You know, it's not going to, I don't live in a diner. I can't have a lady come by.
You should have a lady come by with a cigarette hanging out of her mouth and a bad attitude.
Who's that? That's Velma.
Far too many years on her to be working here still.
We can all see her.
Thanks, Lanny, Alan, Mike, for being patrons. Patreon.com/iFanboy is where you can go support the show and get your superpower live in the show. And as we mentioned earlier, Jim is here. And so we want to talk about industry stuff.
That means something has gone wrong in comics.
So we're all Comixology readers. We're all reading. Josh and I have been reading digitally for well over a decade. Jim is also a digital reader. We get a lot of emails about this, by the way. This is a topic of stress for a lot of people who are digital readers. A lot of our audience is digital readers. Comixology obviously was bought by Amazon many years ago. For a long time, it operated as a separate entity, Amazon sort of hands off. In the last few months, Amazon has become super hands on, took control, changed the app, changed the store. They got rid of the website. Comixology.com is no more. Everything's handled through the Kindle store. It's almost impossible to find books unless you really are specific in what you're searching for. Otherwise, you're getting bed sheets and lunch boxes and all the thing else related to the Nightwing you just searched for. And then the app itself is now based on the Kindle app. It's, for my money, way worse. It doesn't function as smoothly. It's slow. It's heavy. It kills my battery. Every time I open it, I got to wait for a minute so it can load before I can start moving anything around. It's hard to do the show. So, Jim, why don't you talk about Comixology and what's been going on and your thoughts and everything?
Man, it is just awful. And I'm gonna go out on a limb here and say that Comixology may have or Amazon may have just killed the digital comics ecosystem because it is what a terrible experience. It's just one of those things where you've seen it happening slowly for a while, where more and more, like, Comixology, like, you know, used to feel like its own brand. It had its own, you know, had a bit of swagger. They spent a lot of money recently to get Scott Snyder to come do a bunch of original books for them, and like now it feels like, I don't know, like if that was a failed experiment or something or what, because to even try and find those books is impossible. And so, you know, I think the excuse that they use, and like I say, is excuse because I don't know if something else is happening kind of behind the scenes that, like, I feel like Comixology as a brand may not even be here in a couple of years kind of thing. It will just be digital comics on Amazon kind of thing. But like Amazon Comics. But they basically just said,
well, the scary thing about that though is that, like, the when you say a lot of money, like, this is peanuts to them.
Sure,
not even peanuts. Right. It's the dust at the bottom. So that's the scary part of it. Because why do they give a shit about this? It's a tiny market and it ain't growing.
Right. And that's it. And so, like, the thing they said is they just wanted to, instead of operating two separate kind of digital ecosystems, it's a lot easier to manage if it's just tied into one. Which would be fine if now the only good way to read digital comics is if you have a 32-inch separate monitor on your desk, because it's
I've noticed that the files, while bigger, are not as sharp. Like, yep. Clearly the files for the books are bigger. They just are, you can tell from using the app and using everything, but the quality isn't as good. The functionality of the app, I don't ever use the desktop for reading, but for the reading the app is worse. You know, double page spreads, you can't swipe through anymore. It all gets messed up.
I mean, like, I think this opens up the door for somebody to come in. But like this thing, like I can't imagine. I don't even know what the rights deals look like today anymore, right? But, like, I mean, I think it really opens the door for another, you know, startup that, like, isn't necessarily going to look to make, you know, a killing on it, but for, you know, for digital comics reader, whether it's mobile or whatever. Because, like while every publisher will tell you that digital comics, while important, do not make up a terrible amount of sales for them.
No.
But look, for the longest time, the iPad was the best experience I've had reading comics. Like, look, I still get physical comics and I love that. But when it's night and all the lights are out and you want to, like, you know, read a couple issues in bed or whatever, like, you can just grab the iPad or, you know, and go and read them. It makes the colors bright. They're crisp. Like, like I said, it was just one of the best experiences, and for that to just kind of feel like it disappeared overnight is truly, truly something.
I have seen people say that, you know, this is a chance for other companies to innovate, but the fact of the matter is all that matters is who has the Marvel and DC licenses.
Correct.
That's it. I mean, Josh and I were there in the early days of digital comics. We worked for Graphically. Graphically was a competitor of Comixology at the time. You know, no one really had won the war yet. In fact, there was even a moment where Comixology and Graphically were going to merge. Didn't happen. Mm-hmm. But then once Comixology got Marvel and DC, everyone else died, because that's the only thing that matters. So sure, another
game over
could come along and make a better reader, but it doesn't matter unless they have all the comics. Comixology worked because they had all the comics.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Well, but Comixology, one of the things that Comixology did well that I really enjoyed was the way it just kind of curated their front page. Like, yeah, you're gonna, like, go to get, you know, the next big issue of whatever, but then the way it kind of showcased some of their Comixology originals or all that, that was a pipeline for creators to kind of get into that feels like it has just been shut off.
What's really bizarre and interesting is, like, if you go to the store, the Kindle Comics store, as it's called, the first line is Comixology originals, the second line is featured new issues, and then you have to go like four or five down before you even find the other new comics. Like they make it very hard.
I had a hard
time
finding that.
It was
in the top banner, but it rotated. So like if you looked there and you sort of slid through them, they were there. But it took me a little bit.
But then you've got some books that are included in Prime Reading, others in Kindle Unlimited, and then there's Comixology Unlimited. And like they for seemingly like all sit in different buckets. And I'm like, well, if you're gonna do that, just tie it to a Prime account. I don't understand the need for a Comixology Unlimited if like you're gonna have these other weird buckets of stuff. I imagine it's got to do with probably some of the royalties or whatever that they have to pay or, you know, for some of the licensing fees and whatnot. But it's like, it is just a confusing mess right now.
Yeah. I'm looking at it right now. Granted, this is not Wednesday, so it may be different on Wednesdays. I haven't looked, but you know, the top is a featured book. We Have Demons, it's the Scott Snyder book. And then next to that's featured Comixology Originals. Below that, included with your Prime membership, a bunch of free books. And below that's trending on Comixology. Below the next to that's new noteworthy graphic novels. And then I get to this week's featured new releases. It's only 26 books.
Mm-hmm.
And then below that's comics, graphic novels you may like. I mean, I don't even know where the rest of the new books are. Like, if I wasn't able to get my books till Friday, where would I even find them?
But I don't even know, like, where they're, like, the comics and graphic novels you may like. I don't know where these choices are coming from. Like, because these are don't look like books I may like. At least the ones that are showing up for me.
The ones that are showing me are the books I've read all these books. So these some on my Comixology accounts. I don't know why. Like, yeah, I've got Batman the Imposter and I already got it. So it just went from I get it. I get the business, all the business reasons why this happened from Amazon's perspective. But it was you got the feeling that Comixology was created by comic book readers knowing what other comic book readers need and wanted, whereas you get the feeling now that that is not the case. The way the store is laid out, the way the app is laid out, it's taken me weeks to figure out how to filter it so that I can only see the books I've downloaded, as opposed so that I can get for the show. Like, have all the new books at the top. It took me weeks to figure that out. It's not easy. You know, the smart lists were the best thing ever for me on that old app, where I could sort of manage my books that way. Keep books I was still in the middle of reading on the bottom, books I for the show up at the top. I realized that no one else has these problems, but it was like I could manage my I could manage my account in a certain way for my own needs. And here you can't do that. All the flexibility is gone. I can't get rid of books. Like, I want to delete them from, like, I just show me the ones I've got downloaded currently on the iPad. Not all of the books in my account, because I got a lot of books in my account, but I used to keep them off the iPad.
You can do that.
It's not
the
as simple.
The top left has a little filter drop down.
Yes, the filter is not
honestly,
as simple
like,
as turn
I
off
hear you.
On and off. There was it a toggle
bothered,
before.
That part hasn't bothered me at all. I figured it out. It's a little quicker. I just hit downloaded and it gets rid of all of them. It has a little thing that says red. That part hasn't bothered me. And also, when we're talking about deleting the books, it actually has a select feature, which I didn't have before, so I can bulk delete books from my device, which makes me pretty happy.
I've tried, the books won't delete.
Perspective.
Yeah, it's just weird.
It won't delete books off my iPad. It's a
you
big
must keep them.
It's a big problem, and I don't know where it goes from here. You know,
that's the biggest thing. I don't know where it goes from here. And I think, like I said, like, is the digital marketplace worth it, or is there. Can Marvel license their books to someone else at this point? Right? Like, there's a lot of questions there that I think will all start to come out in the next couple, hopefully in the next couple of months or so. But, like, is it big enough to support someone else to come out? And I just don't know. I don't think so.
I don't see that happening, because anybody would have to beat Amazon, and that doesn't make any sense. So what you're going to do, you know, best case scenario, I don't even know a best case scenario, but you know, you white label an app, and then Marvel says, well, fine, we'll do this on our own. And then you've got everything in different places again, which is how it started, which sucked.
Right.
I think that's the most likely scenario, is that Marvel and DC take the books back and just have their own apps. I think that's the most likely scenario.
I mean, it depends, though. If their sales don't change and their revenue stays at least steady, they've got no reason to do that.
Or like then that's the scenario I can see happening, is be like Marvel being like, well, we want the books back. And Amazon's like, well, we'll pay double what we normally pay. And
even like, let's if you make books, digital or otherwise, then you need to partner with Amazon. And if you know the publishing, they have to, you know, they've all got a hold on that. I don't see that going anywhere.
But I think
again,
if the money
you're
was...
talking about, then Disney makes a play against Amazon. I don't see that.
But for Marvel though, I think right, like unless because like they're making their money right, I would imagine right now mostly just by Amazon being like, here's the amount of money that we will pay for your access to your books, right? And I gotta believe that there is a scenario that Marvel would willingly take those book backs to bolster Marvel Unlimited. Right.
Yep.
And so that's a very real thing. And so like that's where I think, you know, it'll be interesting to see kind of what happens there.
But I do think, Josh, you're correct that the way they come at that is they just dump money on them again. Say, we don't really care. Here's twice your licensing fee.
But right. Jim said that, not me. I'm not that smart.
Well, you said they just pay them more for their books, but it doesn't matter. Either way, I think it's interesting what's going to happen. It is a mess right now. And I know the comic readers are not happy. I mean, I see it every week. We get emails every week. I see people talking about it online. It's just digital comic readers.
Let me ask you this. Have comic readers ever been happy? It's not like we can look backwards now and say, oh, I guess Comixology wasn't that bad. But people were bitching about Comixology the whole time, too. It's just that then that changes like, oh, this is worse than
that. I don't know they're bitching about the functionality of the technology, though.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's the case. Jim, we got to say goodbye to you now.
Yeah, I got to roll.
Thanks for being on the show, Jim. Thanks for talking about Comixology.
Thanks for having me.
We appreciate it. Have a good day.
All right. I'll talk to you guys.
You did a good job, and we appreciate you.
Hey, all right. I'll come back anytime.
Go to comicbook.com.
Yes, please. Thank you.
All right. Jim's got a mortgage. All right, so no email this week, so the contact@fanboy.com is where you can go right in for our email section segment. We did the Comixology discussion instead. Let's do some plugs and get out of here. We had a lot of shows. In fact, ever since mid-February, we had a special edition show come out every week. So about 6 weeks of special edition shows come out. The last four were The Booksplode on the new Teen Titans, The Judas Contract. We had the Batman review. We had Catwoman Hunted review. We had our Media Splode show that just came out behind this one, our pre-Oscars show, which was about way more than that, but it was a lot of fun. And then coming up, I think this week, right, Josh, is our Talksplode with Daniel Warren Johnson interview.
That's right.
So yes, 7 weeks in a row, you'll have had special edition shows come out. And then also we just mentioned Jim's website, comicbook.com. He didn't create it, but he runs it. He's in charge. He's the boss. So you can check that out for all your movie still needs.
Movie still needs. That's going way back.
Yep.
Let's see. You can find all of our shows over at ifanboy.com. You can find every show that Jim has done before. So when the industry went in on its head at some point, you can find him come on and talk about it intelligently, I might add.
Yep.
You know, it's a guy who's got experience and skin in the game and context and actually talks to the people in the middle of it. And I think it's the thing about our show that I'm proud of. That's basically what I was getting at. It's like, we're not just having some rando come in and talk about their opinion. Guy knows what he's talking about because he's got to pay his mortgage that way. But that's all there, and that's the kind of care that we take for the show. I don't know why I'm feeling proud of the show right now. I was having this before we started. I was like, yeah, we really take it seriously. You guys know we did a good job, I think. You can find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out over on @iFanboy on Twitter, @iFanboyComics on Instagram. You can follow us individually. Connor and I are on Instagram @CSKilpatrick and J.A. Flanagan. Jim Viscardi, which is his name, and his tag on both Twitter and Instagram is there. You can subscribe to our YouTube page at youtube.com/ifanboy. You'll keep up to date on the old video show re-uploads. The full-length shows are all up there, the long ones, but the shorties are all still going up there. Our iFanboy minis, a lot of you have been waiting for this. The new comics preview for the books that came out on August 20th, 2008.
Yeah, it's very exciting.
Which was close to my third wedding anniversary.
Yeah.
And I believe I'm going to hit my 17th wedding anniversary this August. So there's some context. And then a show about the Apocalypse-tics, which it tells me Ron. That's all that says to me.
But we
so
have,
that stuff is there.
All the files have been uploaded, so I was able to see. These uploads are going to run through July or into July. And there's some really good ones coming. Like someone very excited to come out. It's finally, you know, back
nice.
On it. You know, we're not doing this for the views. We're doing this just sort of a digital archive of what we did. But there's some real good ones coming up. We did Yeah, we'll talk about them as they come out, but some really fun ones are coming up. So you can check those out every Tuesday and Thursday on iFanboy.com/iFanboy. And finally, if you like the show, please consider writing a review or leaving a star rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. It helps shows. It helps people find shows. It helps the algorithm find shows. Any podcast you listen to, not just ours, consider leaving them a review or a rating wherever you listen to podcasts. Even better than that, it's word of mouth when people ask you about podcasts, because it's been almost a generation and people are still discovering podcasts every day, discovering that they exist, discovering that they have shows that of their interest they're interested in. They're finding those out there. So if anybody asks you what you listen to, thank you for telling them iFanboy, even if they don't like comics, but you can tell them anyway. Why not? We appreciate it. So thanks to Jim Viscardi for coming on from comicbook.com. He had to run, but thank you for coming on the show and providing valuable insight and discussion. And thank you for listening. I'm Connor.
I'm Josh. Yes, what he said, thank you. You're all wonderful. Don't let us love the cold.